Well, the man in charge of Australia's most successful and controversial investment bank is to retire, we discovered this week. Alan Moss announced that his 15-year tenure as head of Macquarie Bank would come to a close after he hands down the group's full-year result in May. Having reached a $100 a share just a year ago, the bank stock is now trading at just over $60, so that's a significant decline. But in context, it perhaps reflects global conditions more than it does issues specific to the bank itself. So where to now for an organisation that prides itself on the deal, on getting things done? Stephen Main is the editor of the Main Report and the founder of Crikey, and one of the best things you could say about Stephen and his commentaries on the bank is that he's not predictable. He can throw both bouquets and brickbats. So I'm delighted to welcome him. Good morning.
Morning, Geraldine.
Now, Stephen, Alan Moss said this week he's retired because he's about to turn 60 and that it's simply time to move on, not because the global investment environment is suddenly looking a whole lot tougher. Should we believe him?
Oh, look, I think that's a fair argument. He's been in the top job for almost 15 years. The average shelf life of an Australian CEO is 3 to 4 years. He's had the ambitious successor snapping on his heels for many years now. And the story of Macquarie Bank and the subprime crisis is the fact that the bank almost seems to be bulletproof, that they've taken no profit write-downs. Yet the share price has come off a little bit, but they've suffered no losses like many of their Wall Street peers. And I think you have to say that that Alan Moss goes out on a high and with a remarkable record.
So Alan Moss did not want to do a John Howard and have somebody sort of quietly behind him saying, you've broken a deal. I mean, I'm just being a bit cute, but you think that that succession issue has been something to manage well?
Well, he described it as a very difficult decision, and I think, you know, you can see evidence of potentially some tension within the bank. Nicholas Moore wasn't on the board of Macquarie Bank when another couple of executives were. Nicholas Moore was sitting on the boards of Macquarie Airports, Macquarie Infrastructure Group, so he was sitting on all the other big boards, but not on the major head office board of the bank. So I imagine there was a little bit of, you know, ambition and tension. I mean, Macquarie Bank is a bit of a shark pool. It's the smartest guys in the room. These things have to be managed. But I think the way they've done it after 15 years, I think it is appropriate. And the thing that surprised me the most was the fact that the share price tanked by 9% on the day that the handover was announced, which was the largest wipeout of value that we've ever seen from an appointment or a departure the last 20 years in Australia.
Is that right?
Well, $1.66 billion wiped off the value of Macquarie Bank because the CEO retires. Sure, the market was down 3% that day, but that was a huge bouquet for Alan Moss and quite a brickbat for Nicholas Moore, as many in the market fear the Macquarie Bank will become too much of a risk taker without the brilliance and the sort of cautious conservatism of Alan Moss being the ultimate risk manager over the years at Macquarie.
So you'd see that as a characteristic difference between the two, one as a risk manager, one as a risk taker?
Well, I think the point is that Nicholas Moore has been the man who, from the ground up, drove the strategy of buying $200 billion worth of infrastructure globally and putting them into separate listed funds and extracting fees. And it is an incredible story that a bunch of bankers in Martin Place there in Sydney control the largest pool of global infrastructure assets. And that is the story of what Nicholas Moore, the incoming CEO, has driven. And you can characterise Alan Moss as, well, he's the great risk manager, but he obviously signed off on all these deals. You know, paying $5.6 billion for Sydney Airport 5 years ago was considered a pretty crazy brave move at the time. But it was Nicholas Moore who had the vision to say, this is actually just going to be one great big shopping centre, which is the way he viewed that deal. Mm. And Alan Moss looked at the arguments and said, sure, OK, we'll pay, you know, $1 billion more than anyone else offers. Everyone pilloried them at the time, and they've doubled the profits and it's turned out to be a dream deal, and the airport's now worth about $12 billion. So,
yes, I know. I pay all those taxi fees, etc., and the fees to park my car there. I'll tell you what. You know, for 5 minutes you go and pick someone up and you come out and you've got a $10 fee to park your car.
Oh, there's no doubt they're charging like wounded bulls, but that's the strategy of Macquarie. They buy what they call privileged assets, which I think most people would call monopoly assets, and then they use the pricing power to gouge the customers. I mean, it's pretty brutal. For me, the time that Macquarie Bank went in and bought Rome Airport and sold it a few years later and made $1 billion on the transaction, to go into the heart of the Roman Empire and make a quick billion, for me, is just an incredible performance by a bunch of bankers out of Sydney.
You're getting carried away now. In fact, some people have described Nicholas Moore as the deal maker without peer in Australia. And I suppose it is, just before we leave this part of the interview, it is the great unknown, isn't it, whether the deal maker can step up to run the complex system that is Macquarie Bank. I remember Alan Kohler coming onto this program, I think 2 years ago now, and saying that one of the really, really clever things that Moss did was that he managed greed inside the bank exceptionally well, so that the people management, you set up this amazing competitive spirit in there, from what one hears, but then you have to manage that, because it can get way out of control.
Well, I think that's a good point, and Nicholas Moore is quite sensitive to this argument that he's not a people manager, he's a deal maker, and he was quoted in the Financial Review this morning saying that he hasn't specifically led a deal for 10 years. Instead, he's been managing 3,000 deal makers, and that he's actually been managing a deal-making machine whilst sitting on the broader executive committee and getting used to the other parts of the bank, such as, you know, commodity trading and proprietary trading and the futures and all the other elements of a global investment bank. So that was the big question, is Alan Moss was a very good people person. He had complete control right across the bank. Nicholas Moore just characterised as the aggressive deal maker. And Nick Moore is basically saying, no, I've been managing people for a long time, and I can handle the broader bank now that I've got the job.
Now, we've really had a bit of an update on that whole question of managing greed this week, haven't we, with the bonus restructure, which I'm going to ask you to explain. I wonder if you see it as a parting gesture from Alan Moss or an early sign of new direction, really, from Nicholas Moore.
Oh, this is a really interesting part of the story, Geraldine, because Macquarie Bank's been criticised for years for paying their staff too much. And last year, Alan Moss got $33.5 million and Nicholas Moore just got a tad under that. And usually what's been the case is politicians and journalists will criticise this, but the shareholders of Macquarie have never had a problem because the share price has been rocketing over the years. But last year, one of the powerful proxy advisory firms, a group called ISS, advised all of Macquarie Bank's shareholders to vote against the remuneration report because too much of the bonuses each year was paid in cash and was based on short-term performance. And the argument goes is that you should be receiving bonuses based on long-term performance, and you should be receiving shares in bonus rather than straight cash. And there was a 21% protest vote at the annual meeting last year, which was the biggest protest vote in the 10 years that Macquarie Bank's been a stock exchange company. And the board has blinked. So Nicholas Moore will now receive an extra 35% of his bonus each year will be in the form of Macquarie Bank shares that he'll have to buy and hold for 3 years.
So it very much encourages a medium-term view rather than quick taking of profit.
That's correct. If you look at last year, when these guys were receiving close to 80% of their pay in short-term cash bonuses, the share price was in the high 80s last year when bonuses were handed out. The share price is now $61 or thereabouts. So a lot of the executives haven't felt the same pain as us shareholders have felt because they just got cash. So if they'd received shares at $87, they'd all be sitting there now saying, gee, we've just lost 25-30% of our bonus because the share price has gone down. So at least in the future we know they'll be feeling our pain and sharing our successes on the share price along with the rest of the shareholders rather than just getting truckloads of cold hard cash.
And I think you've written, Stephen Mayne, that ironically none of this might have happened without Peter Costello's reform, which gave us voting on remuneration reports.
One of the best things Peter Costello did was introducing that reform, which he borrowed from the UK, which is a non-binding vote on the overall pay structures and remuneration policies of a company. It's forced the market to focus on executive pay, and we've seen it best demonstrated with Macquarie Bank being brought to heel, that they had an inappropriate bonus structure. The shareholders sent them a message, and they've now changed their policies for the better. So I think that the market's working very well now, and thank you very much, Peter Costello, for that reform.
Even if he does join the bank, as some little suggestions say, when he comes at some point, you know. Look, last question, Stephen. How do you think Macquarie will fare in this new world of tight credit? They've built this incredible store of assets, as you said, on the back of cheap credit for a number of years. But is the era of cheap, easy credit maybe over?
Well, I think it is over, and that is the big challenge for Macquarie Bank. But for mine, the single most brilliant thing that the bank has done, apart from obviously buying this $200 billion worth of infrastructure assets, was they've got $150 billion or thereabouts of debt supporting all these assets and the broader bank right across the empire. And more than 80% of that debt is at fixed interest rates and locked in for beyond 2 years. So their great skill was in borrowing all this money on the cheap and then locking it in the long term. Mm. Now, if we have a sustained credit crunch where it's difficult to refinance over a 2, 3, or 4 year period, then certainly that will get progressively more difficult for Macquarie as their various loans expire. But they haven't been caught out like Centro with excessive long, short-term loans that they're tempting to roll over in the middle of a credit crisis. And for mine, that was their great skill. But it's going to be very tough for anyone like Macquarie trying to raise new debt for new deals in the current environment. So I think that the music will stop in terms of future acquisitions. But at the end of the day, you know, when you own the biggest array of toll roads and airports in the world, and you're just taking annual fees of between 1% and 2% off the value of those, then that's a pretty lucrative business, and they already have all these assets within the empire.
All right, Stephen, thank you very much indeed.
Thanks, Geraldine.
Stephen Main, who's been writing on this in Crikey and in the Main Report, which you might like to seek out.